Welcome to the Why We Build podcast. Join Steve Wheeler and our host, Greg Waller, to explore the world of remodeling. Whether you're on the production team, design team, or managing the whole show, you can expect insights, tips, and stories that inspire and educate. So let's dive into the Why We Build podcast.
Welcome to the Why We Build podcast. I'm Greg Wallach, and I'm here with Steve Wheeler. If you have any thoughts about the show, who should be on it, or topics we should cover, please send me an email, greg@remodelersadvantage.com. Today, Steve, we're going to talk about GRIT, Girls Representing in Trades. That is a catchy acronym, yes, but it's a declaration. It's a movement. It's a mindset. For decades, construction has been seen as a man's world, but if you've spent any time on the job site recently, you'll know that that stereotype is crumbling faster than a poorly poured foundation. Today, we celebrate the women who show up with steel-toed boots, hard hats, and a determination to carve out their place in the industry. These trailblazers are not only building homes and structures, they're building confidence, dismantling outdated perceptions, and showing everyone that skill and dedication don't come with a gender label. I can only assume that this journey isn't easy. Being a woman in the trades often means navigating challenges that go beyond the physical demands of the job. It's also about breaking stereotypes, challenging the unconscious biases that we all have, and proving over and over that women belong here. And you know what? They're not just proving it, they're excelling. So what does grit really look like? It's the apprentice who doesn't back down from learning the toughest skills. It's the seasoned veterans who mentor young women entering the field. It's every woman who decides that the job site is where she wants to be, no matter what anyone else thinks. And in this episode, we'll hear from someone that is at the forefront of this movement. Because when it comes to the trades, there are no room for stereotypes, just grit. Steve, please introduce our guest.
Great. So, Finnish carpenter, business owner, educator, trade school advocate, Noli Anderson has been dedicated to teaching women and young girls tool skills since the inception of GRIT, Girls Representing in Trades, in 2017. Along with her dedication to her craft, her involvement in the Micro Works Foundation, working alongside Wolverine Boots through Project Bootstrap, and relationships with many other generous companies like Sasco Sealants and the Harbor Freight Leadership Lab, has afforded her opportunities to travel, build, and teach all over the country. Her newest project is developing the Pre-Apprenticeship Trade Skills Program, Women's Workforce Montana, on behalf of the University of Montana and the City of Missoula, which launches in the spring of 2025. Her work as a trades advocate and instructor has had her featured in Forbes, This Old House, Rural Builder, and the New York Times. Welcome to the show, Noli.
Thanks, you guys. Greg, that was a beautiful intro. You didn't prepare me emotionally for how you were going to kick this off.
Well, thank you for saying that, Noli. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm very excited to be here. This is this podcast world is new to me, but I listen to podcasts on the job site more than I listen to music. So I am excited that you guys are making more content for me to consume at work.
We're glad to hear that for sure. So, you know, we're going to get into grit for sure, but how did you get into the trades? What brought you into this world?
It's a great question. I am a cusper generationally. So I am not only a little bit Gen Z, but I'm also a little bit millennial. And I live out in rural Montana. I grew up in Billings, Montana, which is not the rural part of the state, but now I live in Lewistown, which is definitely very country, cattle country specifically. And when I was growing up, I was very artistic. I really liked painting and drawing and sculpture and beadwork and all of these artsy craftsy things, and was really encouraged to pursue a lot of those skills by my family and by my school system. Had an incredible art program. And once I got to be, you know, deciding your future age around 16 to 18, folks were really pushing me to go to college, four-year university, get maybe a graphics degree or even a teaching degree was on the table for a really long time. And within all of that encouragement, there was also kind of this underlying current of economic shift around, being a teacher is actually not that profitable and a really hard thing to dig your way out of having the school student debt and the university debt to get a 4-year degree in anything, let alone in something that isn't an incredibly profitable career. So I took a gap couple of years, not just one, but did not go to college right away because that looming fear of the student debt really kind of breeded a lot of anxiety in me, being a kid who wanted to go to art school but knew she could not afford it. And once I kind of was in the workforce for a little bit, being a young person working service jobs and being creative on my off hours, it occurred to me and occurred to me with the help of a junior college professor who was a math professor. I had gone to a junior college and was just going to knock out some credits just in case I wanted to go to college. And my advisor at the time at the junior college was a math professor who said, "Listen, don't go to art school, don't get a teaching degree. You should go to trade school. That would be a really good fit for you." And sure enough, he was right. I looked at the carpentry curriculum at the Missoula College, and it was like, hands-on training, building in the field. You get to be in the wood shop every day. There was maybe like two lectures in the first year, and I thought that that was really appealing because I did not want to sit in a lecture hall anymore, or ever, really. And so I called up the Missoula College and got through their administration. And Dennis Danicky, he was the director of the college at the time, of the Carpentry College specifically. He answered my phone call on a Sunday and he said, "Can you come tour the college right now? I'm here. I would love to give you a tour in person." He was almost a little bit of a used car salesman of like, "How do we get you into this car today?" And he really wanted me to join. And just like a series of encouraging people after encouraging persons led me into the carpentry program. And I have been very happy as a carpenter ever since. It has been so much fun to build things, to travel all over the country building things. Now in my small town, I get to build things for my neighbors and for my family and people that I love, which is wonderful. And transitioning back into a world of education, which has always been a passion of mine, learning and teaching, which is lovely that we in this modern day and age can become educators and teachers without the 4-year degree necessarily. And the world is changing so fast. There's all kinds of new different ways to accomplish goals that are outside of academia, which bodes really well for people like me.
Well, I fell in love with carpentry as well. And other than the job I have now, that was my favorite job, just being a carpenter and building stuff. I loved it very, very much. Now, it sounds like you had a really great experience when you found your trade school. What should women, or really anyone, but what should women look for specifically when they are looking for a trade school or some kind of trading program, apprenticeship, anything like that? What would you recommend?
Well, an immediate green flag is if there are other women in the program. Honey brings in flies. If it's going well for some women, it's probably going well for most women. And that's always an easy telltale. If you're lucky enough to meet someone like Dennis Danicky, who is a male advocate for females in the trades, stick with programs like that. I did not know a lot going in. I did not admittedly do any research. It was just the school that was closest to me and the most affordable, so that's the one that I picked. But looking back at my education there, the most valuable thing that I picked up at my 2-year trade school was vocabulary. I learned all of the words for the tools and the hardware that I had seen in hardware stores, I had seen in my dad's garage before. But I didn't know how to ask about them or what to call them or how to use them. But learning that vocabulary was really the thing that kind of broke through the wall of getting me into a career and into the industry. So if I were to give someone some advice about how to find a program, I'd say don't worry about what they build, don't worry about how they build it. If they're teaching vocabulary, that's going to be the golden ticket.
Very good. The first thing you said about find a program where there's other women, that was like, shouldn't have been a light bulb moment for me, but it was. That was a really, really profound statement. I'm Think, man, why didn't I think of that? That's
Yeah. Well, and there
that's
are quite a few new but well-established trade programs all over the country that are very female-focused. Hammerstone is a school that popped up in the last couple of years that teaches women carpentry skills specifically. Girls Garage in California is a school that I idolize. I think that their program is amazing and it's geared toward high school and middle school girls. And they're doing incredible builds and incredible education work. Here in Montana, I know that the Red Ants Pants Foundation does a lot of tool skills specifically for women. And of course, Grit is also here in Montana where we're teaching folks. There are people carving out space for the women in the industry, which has happened more now in this day and age than ever in history. So it's a good time to become a woman in the trades.
So let's fast forward a little bit. You've gone through your trade program and now you're looking for a job. What obstacles were you up against in getting a job? Again, someone with inexperience, probably not easy for anyone, but a woman. Like what did you have to fight through? And I hope there's some good stories here. So let's, tell them.
I mean, luckily, Greg, I have more success stories than I have horror stories. The horror stories exist, and I am lucky to have dodged many of those really terrible instances. But there are some things that really bog you down after a while. You know, just to get someone to reply to an interview or a application, a resume that has a female name on it can be very difficult. And this was back pre-COVID times when I was applying for my first jobs out of college. So it takes a little bit of convincing back then, a little bit more than now that when the need has become quite a bit more. One of my biggest hurdles was usually just getting my foot in the door because once I could get them to see me and witness the skills that I had honed and the value that I bring to the table, then it wasn't a concern of anybody's. But to get your foot in the door is really the hardest challenge, I think. There were times where I would change my name on my resume to Nolan instead of Noli just to see if maybe I would get a better bite. And there were some interviews where they were very honest with me and they were just like, listen, we're just not interested in hiring women. It's a hard dynamic for our company. It's not something we're interested in. And that's easy for me then to know that I don't want to work there. Like, I'm glad you told me that. I'm gonna set my sights elsewhere. There's this element of feeling like you do have to prove yourself all of the time on the work site. And the best remedy for that I have found is just to find places to work at that aren't interested in that kind of attitude and that kind of dynamic. There's few and far between when I started out, and it seems like we've been creating more of a community that is not interested in operating that way, which is very inspiring.
Glad to hear that your experience wasn't poor. That's a relief for me. And now as an employer that may be anticipating bringing on, I mean, folks of any color, gender, whatever, and how do they get their companies ready for that? If it is a big change for their company, how do they get their cultures set up to be more accepting of anyone that wants to work in this
That's a
industry?
really good question. It's a heavy question for a lot of folks. Diversity is important because it brings a value to a team, and it brings a value to a culture. And I know a lot of people are very hesitant to instill any DEI course or DEI training because it makes you feel like you're being disciplined or you're in trouble. Diversity does not mean that you are taking away something from someone else. It just means that you are expanding the opportunities for everyone. So, when a company is interested in doing a little bit more diverse hiring, just being open and interested in listening to what those demographics are looking for is so essential. And the ones who aren't interested in diversity aren't going to get diverse applicants. So it kind of carves its own riverbed out of the places where I'm going to go and apply and put my really valuable skills aren't going to be in the places where they have made it known that I am not going to belong there. So if you have any interest at all in diversity, just double down on that. Start asking more questions, start looking for resources that people have put out in the world. I mean, Remodeler's Advantage. You guys bring on quite a diverse group of people in your podcast, but there are millions of podcasts out there now that are women talking to other women about being in construction, about the racial gap, the gender gap, all these different things. There's just so many resources now that to make a successful culture in your workplace is really pretty simple.
Steve, did you have something?
What are some of the questions when you're talking to younger women who are essentially getting, thinking about doing this as a career? What are some of the questions that they ask you?
A lot of them ask me how much money I make,
Okay.
which when I was a tradesperson was a really fun question to answer. Now, as an educator, it's a little bit less glamorous. But they want to know about the success rate of my income as a self-employed person or as a hired hand. Both parts of the industry, I have always been very financially successful. I usually like to tell them, like, I graduated with no debt. Completely debt free. I had a scholarship from the Micro Foundation, which was unbelievably easy to get a hold of. And once I graduated, I bought a house. And granted, it wasn't the nicest house on the block and it needed all of the skills that I honed at school to fix it up. But that is the kind of opportunity I like to show the girls who are asking me about, well, what does it mean to be a carpenter lifestyle wise? It's also, I get to make my own hours. I get to work with my body. I get to work with my creative problem solving, my hands and my head. And then at the end of the day, I get to come home and know that I'm building a life for myself that is upholding all of my values of wanting to be moving around quite a bit, wanting to be creative, and all of those kinds of elements that you don't necessarily get from a 9-to-5 desk job. And definitely, you get less and less from going to a historic four-year university.
So we want to know about grit, capital G, capital R, capital I, capital T. And I can attest to your graphic artist skills. They're not here, but I have the stickers that you designed. Very, very cool. So tell us about that organization.
So Grit started through the YWCA in Missoula, Montana, back in 2017. Some really fabulous women there had put together the program and approached me as a carpentry student, asking if I could teach one of the facets of their program. So they did bike mechanics, they did wind turbine technology, all these different STEM subjects. And we also did welding, which I was a part of because I had been taking a welding course at the school at the time, and then carpentry. So they came to me at the college and said, we want to teach middle school girls some basic tool skills and building skills, but we don't know how to do that. Can you be the instructor? Which was so much fun. It got a chance for all of the women in my class. We had three women at the time. We all got to be in community together in a shop with only women for that afternoon, which was so phenomenal. And that was just a little bit of a, let's see, it wasn't after school. It was, spring break. It was a spring break camp for these girls. So they learned welding and carpentry in like the weekend of spring break. Once that was successful for them, they started doing it kind of more all year. So then they expanded to camping skills and backpacking and I think they did a butchery class at one point, which was really rad. Then COVID hit, and the YWCA had to put all of their funding and focus elsewhere just to keep things afloat. So Grit got put on the back burner, and then it was offered up to the university, to the Missoula College Carpentry Program. My director, John Freer, he wrote a grant to get more funding to rehabilitate Grit and put it back into the ether. And that's when he called me and he was like, hey, I know you're back in Montana. Are you interested in making Grit happen? We don't have anyone else on board, but if you want to do it, we want to do it. So he handed it over to me and it has become my pride and joy for the last 2 years. It's been great.
And that program is available to whom in your area?
It's available to high school girls and middle school girls. We also welcome any gender diverse youth, which is awesome. We take on about 12 max students. I have a team of four or five volunteers that are either tradespeople in their own right or hobbyists, which is awesome. We get to go goof off in the wood shop at the Missoula College and learn some tool skills. We do some builds. The girls get to go away with their own projects at the end. We're working to do more community builds, which is a lot of fun too, that they can then go and see something that they built in the community. We also did a middle school construction camp this last year where we went to the Habitat for Humanity build site that had been constructed by a local architect. The designs had been made by a local architect. So we visited the architect's office, learned all about what an architect does. We got to do a little bit of drafting and learned the start to finish design project. And then we went out to the job site where that design was being built and got to help install some flooring and all kinds of different things. It was really, really fun to have all those middle school girls out there.
So someone, woman, gender diverse, whatever, wants to get into the trades. What resources should they be looking for? Who should they be talking to? Where should they be looking?
Yeah, I mean, if they're still in school, a K-12 school, I'm hoping desperately that their school still has a wood shop class in it, if not a welding course or any other skilled trades course. Many junior colleges have skilled trades courses where you can build entire residential homes on site. So you get a little taste for everything, which I think is really important. That way you can find what you like and what you don't like about construction. It's good to know where your interests are so you don't end up in a job that you hate. You can always reach out to the local unions. I know some union halls look like scary shanty sheds in people's towns, but some union halls are really beautiful, established training centers. I've just recently gotten to spend a lot of time in the Carpenters Union Hall down in Las Vegas, where they do a huge training center for folks. And it was so immaculate, it made me cry. I was so impressed with that. But the union reps, they really like to talk you through what it means to become a tradesperson and be a part of the union, and that's always great. There's local organizations that are also national. So NAWIC is a huge resource for people. That's the National Association of Women in Construction. They're always interested in getting more young girls into entry-level positions and positions where they can be apprenticed by other like-minded and safe employers, which is really important.
So there is a lot of stuff out there. I noticed locally, really all over the country, a lot of the local builders associations have a women in construction arm or, you know, special classes and stuff like that. So it's great that that stuff is becoming much more prominent than it was years ago.
Yeah, and you do have to give a shout out to the waves that social media makes. There are so many really, really skilled professionals putting information out for free, not just for homeowners and not just for the DIYers, but really good specific trades education and information. It's just out on YouTube. It's just on TikTok for free. You can just have it. It's crazy.
Well, Steve and I had the opportunity to interview the director of philanthropy for Metallica, and they do a ton of work, all within My Hands Foundation. They support, I forget how many thousands of community college programs out there, but workforce development programs. So another shout out to them for that stuff too. So
I know that they had just put out a pair of boots with Wolverine. Wolverine has been a very generous brand to me over the course of my career. They helped fund my scholarship with the Micro Foundation, and then they have consistently funded parts of Grit, which has been really, really cool. So,
nice, Steve.
Noli, is there I try to make this into one question, but besides just the mindset and kind of stigmas attached to having females in the trades, what other things do you think need to change so that maybe, because I was very excited to hear Wolverine was involved, so that they're making work boots for women and things like that. And so we've heard that from other female carpenters that we've had on the previous show, Tim Fowler's show, that tool belts maybe need to be sized differently or things like that. Are there other things that need to change besides just that stigma or mindset that in 5 years you're just a carpenter and just we don't have to put that female name on it anymore and it's just part of the norm?
It's a great question, Steve. I worked really hard on my attitude early in my career of I'm not a female carpenter, I'm just a carpenter.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be treated like that. And like, why is this always happening to me? Why is my workwear pink? Why are all my tools purple?
Yeah.
This is so
Yeah.
annoying. Why do I have to look like an Easter egg on the job site? Why can't I just look like everybody else? And fighting that fight for so long has now led me to this new attitude around, being a female carpenter does make me a lot like everybody else, but there are these very unique things about being a female carpenter. And there's something that I think a lot of young women in the trades run into is that the industry at large, the society at large wants to put you into two buckets. You are either going to be the sexy pinup girl who is in the Daisy Dukes and is not using her tools very safely because you need to have more PPE on, or you're this hulking she-man butch lady who is like, spitting her tobacco into the spittoon and is giving all the other men headlocks and noogies. The industry wants you to be in one of those two buckets. They don't want you to fall into the middle gray area where you are a tradesperson. You're maybe a mother. You're also a wife. Maybe you work on your family's business. You're a business owner. Maybe you're just a college kid and it doesn't really matter. But at the end of the day, the world is going to view you as a woman. So you need to be able to reckon with that intersectionality in a way. What I would love to see change in the industry at large is that being a woman isn't this weird, mysterious other. It's just a yes and. It's that yes, I am a woman, but I'm also a carpenter. It doesn't have to be one or the other, and it doesn't have to be this weird, mysterious thing that we all need to put pink tools on. We can just be how we are.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, last question before I'm going to kick it back to Steve, a little fun segment. But how can we, the men, your coworkers in this world, how can us, how can employers, how can teachers, make this place more welcoming for women? Clearly, right size PPE is important. We shouldn't all be in the one size fits all because we're not one size fits all. And just th things like that. But what can I do as a person to make someone who job site might be new to them, more comfortable?
I get asked this question quite a bit, and it's a hard thing to answer because everyone's experience is so different. Everyone's needs in an educational setting are very unique. But something that I've known and said to a lot of the men that I've worked with or the men in my life is if you're the only safe person on the job site, you need to go above and beyond for that woman who is there with you. If you know that they're the only woman on the job site, you need to go out of your way to be their ally. You need to go out of your way to work with them and speak with them on a level that makes you both comfortable, but also that sets a precedent with all of the rest of the men on the site and sets a precedent for all the boys in the classroom that this is how we're going to respect and acknowledge the challenges that it takes to be a minority in a place that is historically uncomfortable for women or has been made to be uncomfortable for women. If you can have a conversation like this or listen to a podcast like this where someone is saying, more women want to be a part of this space, what I'd like for you to hear is that you have the capacity to make women feel more comfortable in the space. You're the one that holds the key. All you have to do is look at her in your job site and say, hey, I can tell that A, B, and C is more difficult for you or is being made more difficult for you because of the behavior that's happening here. And I'm not going to put up with it anymore. Speak up for her. Speak up for yourself, even. I mean, the better a job site culture is for women, the better it is for everybody. You go back to that. I mean, we're not just female carpenters, we're all carpenters, right? So it just the responsibility needs to be put taken off of women and put onto the men at work. Like, it's not her responsibility to make herself safe at work. It's your responsibility. It's everyone else's responsibility as well.
No, you very well said. I that was really, you said
Extremely
it
well
just
said.
like you needed to say it. That was very
Thank
good.
you.
So here I'm gonna on that note, I'm gonna kick it over to Steve, and Steve's gonna ask you four or five mystery questions. We haven't given them to you in advance, so if anyone thinks otherwise, we are
Uh-oh.
these are
Now I'm nervous.
clean questions.
It's Hammer Time with Steve Wheeler.
You ready, Mr. Wheeler?
I am. So what's your favorite book, fiction or nonfiction?
My favorite book? Ooh, that's a great question. This is, you're going to think that I planned this, but I literally have a copy of the Girls Garage textbook right next to me. And I do not work for Girls Garage. I'm just a massive, massive fan. This book, I would give everyone this book for Christmas this year if I could afford it. It is an affordable book, but I know a lot of people. It teaches you all the tool basics. It gives you really cool biographies of other tradeswomen historically, and it rules, and all the money goes to their programming. So if you buy this book, then a girl gets to learn how to use tools. So right now, that's my favorite book.
That's awesome. If you could have lunch with any famous builder, carpenter, or designer, who would it be?
Oh, man. Larry Hahn. We watched a lot of Larry Hahn videos in carpentry school on like snow days when we couldn't be out in the house building. And he was just such a kind-hearted person, as portrayed in the videos, at least. And the technology he was using looked outdated, but it really hadn't changed at all to what we were using at our school. So I would love to just like blow his mind with what a CNC machine can do now, or just, you know, talk about all of the new crazy things that are happening now. Yeah, Larry Hahn, what
yeah,
a guy.
What a legacy. Yeah, I probably watch one of his videos once a week. Speaking of skills, what is one random skill you've always wanted to learn but haven't yet?
Ooh, that's a great question. You know, I've become a person within my friend group that gives everyone haircuts, and I can't say that I'm actually very good at it, but they do keep asking me to. So I would probably choose to become better at that so I could make them look a little less silly when they leave my house.
That's pretty good. Okay, last one. Who would play you in a movie about your life and business?
Man, these are fun questions, but I really wish you had asked me that ahead of time. I would like to have a studied session on that one. My life and business.
I can
I'm going to go with
but
Barbara Streisand. I think she is super talented. I don't look anything like her or have any of her skills or talents, but it would be nice to be portrayed the way she portrays the movie Funny Girl.
Oh,
is
yeah.
one of my favorites. And so if I could be the funny girl in my movie, that'd be great.
Great work. Awesome.
Really good stuff, Noli. Noli, before we say goodbye, one last nugget you could share with the listeners. Be about anything.
About
haircuts
anything?
If you want.
Just encourage the women in your life to pick up a tool. Encourage them to go out and build good things. And if you're a woman out there listening, go and learn how the world is built, and it won't look so scary anymore.
Where can we get in touch with you, Noli?
I am on Instagram at Grit Missoula, and I also have a website, gritmissoula.com. You can get my phone number from Greg and give me a call.
Right on. Noli, thank you very much for joining us. Really excited for the work you're doing. Keep it up, please. We need it.
Thanks so much for including me, you guys. I love your show. It's been awesome.
Great. Take care.
Steve, what do you think?
So what I love from the years of doing the Tim Fallon show and this show as well is we get to meet so many people that are just not following the norm. They're carving a path. And I think Noli is just such an enjoyable person to be around, even on this podcast here. You know, she is not only just kind of carving a path for women in construction, but, you know, the way it happened, the way she got here is just so awesome. She didn't just want to be this, take any traditional path. She noticed she had certain skills in art, had a passion for art, and followed, you know, there were a number of good people along that path that helped her get here. And, you know, she's taken this path and just created so many good things, which will carve paths for other women in construction. And like I said, hopefully 5+ years from now, maybe sooner, we're just talking about how the trades have become more diverse across race, gender, and all these places. And she'll definitely be a big part of it in her legacy in construction. And it's just, I love to see these things. It's inspirational and motivational in so many different ways of just not going the normal way.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff that Grit is doing. I remember over the summer watching the Instagram for the program that they were doing with the kids. It was great. The girls, it was amazing the kind of stuff that they were getting to do. So a lot of good programs out there, but
And
especially proud of this one.
I think it'll be important. I'm not going to recap or try to say what she said again, but it was said so eloquently about, how the men in the workforce can help provide this space and be a part of the path of, looking, not just looking out for the women in construction, but the awareness, of being part of a job site or a workforce that is open and inclusive for women. So you really need to be a part of it. I think that starts with all company cultures across the board. So, I mean, again, I don't want to recap what she said because it was said so well. Re-listen to what she said because I think it's just really important to breaking down any of these barriers and making sure we have so many different people in the world in this wonderful space of work in the skilled trades.
Once again, Noli, thank you for being here with us. Grit Missoula, we'll get it in the show notes. And thank you for listening. Get anything you want on the show, please let me know. Greg at remodelersadvantage.com. Thanks again.
That's it for this episode of the Why We Build podcast. We hope you found something valuable to take back to your team. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Please send in your ideas for future episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. If you want more information about our roundtables program, production manager groups, design manager groups, consulting services, or any of the Remodelers Advantage offerings, please visit remodelersadvantage.com or email Greg at remodelersadvantage.com.